Provided by World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods at 6th and University in Champaign. For over 14 years, providing Champaign-Urbana with an international selection of cheeses, olive oil, balsamic vinegar, spices, chocolates, cookies, and more. Catering services are also available. World Harvest encourages you to join them in supporting public radio.
Thanks to everyone who made the WILL sweepstakes a win-win project. 11 lucky listeners won fabulous prizes, all donated by our generous sponsors, and people contributed more than $50,000 to help WILL continue to provide valuable programming and resources for the community. Thank you.
Good morning. This is Focus 580, a morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for the next couple of weeks for David Inge, your regular host. Our producers are Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal, and Travis Stancil also providing production support. And at the controls, Henry Frayne. So that's our crew here today. And glad you could listen. During this hour, Focus 580, we will talk, as we do once a month, with Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a pediatrician here in Champaign-Urbana, and he has been good enough to join us always on the third Thursday, I got to get the day of the week right here, of the month, third Thursday of the month, to take your questions on children's health issues. And so that's what the show is all about. We can't, really do doctoring over the radio, but we can certainly provide general advice, talk about a number of issues related to children's health and behavior. And we invite you to join us. All you have to do is call us, pick up the telephone around Champaign-Urbana, and call us at 333-9455. That's 333-WILL, if you match the letters with the numbers. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us around the Midwest, if you're listening on the air, anywhere in the U.S. on the Internet, if you'd like to use our toll-free line, 800-222-9455. Again, around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. And Dr. Bocek, good morning.
Good morning. It's good to be back.
It's great to see you. I haven't actually hosted the show with you for, I don't think, a couple of years now.
I think it's been a long time, and it's great to be here on this gorgeous day with no Ivan the Terrible coming our way.
Amen to that. Well, we actually have a caller already. Do you want to just go ahead and dive in? This is someone in Champaign.
Let's go ahead.
Okay. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes, good morning, Dr. Bocek.
Yes.
I have a grandson that I think has a serious problem, and his mother is kind of nonchalant about this, but I want to know your opinion. I only get to see him about twice a year, and every time he comes up to visit me, and it's not just when he visits me, it's all the time, he has a problem going to the bathroom, defecating.
Okay.
And he can go for 6 days without passing stool. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay.
How old is he?
He just turned 4.
Okay.
Now, he did have a pilonidal cyst operation when he was an infant. And I don't know whether that could possibly have anything to do with the bowel problem. But I am so concerned about this that the last time he was up here, I mean, I insisted we take him to the emergency room because it had been 6 days.
Okay.
Since he went.
That probably wasn't necessary, but you know what? I quite agree with you. Maybe you've got a problem. Maybe you don't have a problem yet, but it certainly sounds like you're on the way to a problem. And I guess the pilonidal cyst may be part of the problem, because sometimes pilonidal cysts are more than just pilonidal dimples and cysts. Sometimes the spinal cord is involved, and it's the lower part of the spinal cord that will control the bowel. How about his bladder? How about his ability to urinate? Is that a problem at all?
Well, he urinates fine, but he, at 4 years old, should have a little better control. He still wets the bed at night.
Okay. Well, no, that's okay.
Is that okay?
That's not considered a problem yet at that age.
Okay.
But I think, his anal sphincter tone and some of that needs to be evaluated, since he did have a pilonidal cyst, dimple, whatever, I don't know what the exact pathology was. And if that proves to not be a problem at all, then I think he needs dietary or stool softener or some kind of treatment before he goes on to become what we call an encopredic. An encaprese is kind of a follow-up to constipation like this, that these kids get so full, their rectum gets so full of hard stool and so painful to pass
right.
that they don't pass it. Well, obviously, it's got to pass somehow. So what these kids do is they leak. Soft stool comes down from above around this.
Happening now.
Okay. Then he's got a problem.
That's exactly what's happening
yeah.
during the day. He'll have little streaks of soft
okay.
stool in his underwear.
Yeah, skid marks. Yeah, he's got a problem. I think there's two things. One, with the pilonidal early problem, make sure that neurologically that all the nerve connections to the lower bowel are intact. And if that's intact, then deal with the problem, which is boils down to plain old constipation, which is solvable. It's easily solved. Well, it's easily solvable. It's not easily solvable. It's a long-term process, but it's gently and easily solved. It's not a surgical problem. It's usually a problem that has to do with behavioral modification, getting him to sit on the toilet, trying to have a bowel movement, cleaning him out. If he's got a fecal plug there, get rid of that fecal plug with cathartics or enemas, and then making sure the stool stays soft so he doesn't get constipated again. But yeah, you're right.
When you say make sure about the neurological endings, how would you go about doing that after the pilonidal cyst?
Yeah, usually a physical exam will do that. Usually a digital exam of the rectum will
the tightening and
stuff. Yeah, will tell you about sphincter tone. Then we can do anal wink, or if you touch around the anus with a semi-sharp object, not a pin, you don't have to poke them or anything, and nothing painful, but you just stimulate around the anus, you'll get what's called an anal wink, where the sphincter just kind of tightens a little bit and you see the little pucker of the anus there. So that wouldn't be a terribly involved procedure to make sure that he's probably neurologically okay.
Yeah. The other thing that I think this is leading to is a psychological situation, because now he is somewhat terrified of the even thought of sitting on the stool. He said, "I'm going to fall in, and I'm going to go down, and I'm, you know, you're never going to be able to get me back." And I think it's an excuse not to sit on the stool.
It may have been that his toilet training, and again, I hate the term toilet training because it's not our job to toilet train, but that his introduction to the toilet may have been not the way we'd like it. Or what he may be saying is, "I'm not afraid of the toilet. I'm afraid of passing this hard stool because it's going to hurt."
Yeah.
And so if it's going to hurt, I obviously don't want to hurt myself, so I'm going to hold it.
Yeah. He told me the last time, he says, "Grandma, I went poo-poo and it was as big as my leg."
Yeah.
When he said that, I really got scared.
Yeah.
And my daughter said, "Well, yeah, it was pretty significant." So it was a long, long, long stool.
Yeah.
Now, this makes me extremely nervous. I mean, isn't this setting him up for some kind of internal poisoning?
Not really. No. That doesn't tend to be – that's not a problem at all. The problem is, I'm not going to have a bowel movement because it's going to hurt. So I'm not going to do it. So then I'm going to retain it, and then I'm going to leak soft stool from around this fecal plug, and then I'm going to smell bad because I've already got stool in my pants.
Yeah.
And then the other kids aren't going to like me.
That's not a problem yet. I mean,
as he gets into school and that sort of thing, that may get to be a problem. And sometimes these kids are a problem around the house because they don't want mom and dad to know that they've had an accident.
He's sneaky. Yeah, he'll be very sneaky about it.
So they hide their under.
I told my daughter, and tell me if this is a big mistake, and now I'm thinking it is a big mistake. I said, before I knew what you just told me, I said, "Well, give him, put a little piggy bank on the back of the toilet and say, every time you pass a stool, you tell mommy and we'll put a quarter in that, because he likes to go and buy himself little things.
Okay.
And I thought, well, that might, because he likes money, that might inspire him to not be so afraid of sitting on the toilet. But maybe that was a big mistake.
No, no. And I think rewards for just sitting on the toilet are part of, often part of the behavioral modification program, depending on who you read. So that's not a mistake. But I think this young man may need help now, and it may need a visit to his physician to help get rid of this fecal plug, empty him out, so he can start from ground. Make sure that the pilonidal cyst is not still causing a problem.
Right.
And then help clean him out so he starts from ground zero, so he doesn't have to go into labor and delivery every time he has a bowel movement.
Right. Yeah. And have you ever heard of a case where this has persisted all someone's life?
Yes.
Oh.
Some people have chronic constipation all their life, and rarely is it a physical neurologic problem. Usually it's a behavioral thing. They got constipated once. They learned that it hurts to pass this hard stool, so I'm just not going to pass it.
Yeah. Well, I think he's approaching a dangerous threshold right now where he's terrified of the whole concept. And by the time it does come out, it is the size of his leg.
Yeah.
So, well, I thank you, and I will definitely tell my daughter what you said. They're down in Huntsville right now dealing with some other weather issues. So.
Yeah, it sounds like constipation is the least of their problems at this point in time.
Well, Huntsville's not that bad, but I just wanted to get an idea from you, because he's coming up here the first week in October, and I swear I don't want another trip to the emergency room, but...
I agree with you. This boy has a problem, and it's fixable.
Okay. Thank you so much, and thank you for all the help you give to others.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for the call. Other callers are welcome. We're talking with Dr. Robert Bocek, pediatrician here in Champaign-Urbana, taking your questions on children's health issues. All you have to do is call us if you'd like to talk with Dr. Bocek. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Are there any other current issues? We're a little early for flu season, but, there's always something that's going on.
Oh, yes. It's time to start thinking about your flu shot again, and I think the recommendation is coming down more and more, like I talked about. If you want to avoid the flu, get the flu shot. There was something in the media several weeks ago about a lot of the vaccine was contaminated, and there's a problem. Latest I heard, yes, there was contaminated a lot that has been disposed of. Mm-hmm. They think there still will be 100 million doses of the vaccine available, which is more than was available last year at the end, maybe a little later than usual, maybe October before it comes out, which, okay. You've got to till if you get the flu, it's too late to get the vaccine.
Right.
Prior to that, it's fine. So, yeah, put flu on your September calendar in big letters and put it on your October calendar in big letters. So when the vaccine does come out, get in line.
Okay. So there was a problem, but the problem is fixed.
Yes.
Okay. And we expect, I think last year that there was a sort of a shortage of flu vaccinations?
Probably not.
No.
And I think a lot of our shortages are sort of media.
What, the media is exaggerating things? Is that possible?
Yeah. You know, they tell the beginning of the story, but they sort of don't tell the end of the story. You know, I don't think I've ever heard that, there was a problem. Everybody said, there's going to be a shortage of flu vaccine. There's going to be a pandemic this year.
Oh, it's a great story, isn't it?
Then nobody said, it's been fixed. There's going to be 100 million doses of the vaccine available. And so,
that's boring.
Yeah, that is boring.
Well, good to know. So we should be looking for that. We have another call to talk with, and let's go with them. Someone in Champaign, line number one. Good morning.
Hi. Just a couple of questions. The first one, I'll just go ahead and talk about the flu vaccine.
Sure.
What's the minimum age that they can actually have a flu vaccine, kids can?
Ooh, I think 6 months.
Okay. So if I've got a four-month-old, then not until he turns 6 months to administer that?
And I'd have to look that up in the Red Book, but I think it's 6 months.
Okay.
But the other thing is herd immunity.
Okay.
If you and Daddy and any other children in the family get the vaccine, then he's protected. He's somewhat, he's not perfectly protected. He's not as well protected as he would be if he himself had the vaccine. But if everybody in the household is protected, so nobody in the household can get the flu, he's got herd immunity.
Okay. The only problem is he's in daycare. So
okay.
Then you got all the other ones to worry about.
Yeah.
But for at least until, and then it takes, what, 2 to 3 weeks to get into your system?
Well,
typically?
No. Yeah. Well, oops, there's another problem here. Kids who have never, young children who have presumed to never have had flu before need two doses.
Oh, okay.
A month apart, because it's not certain that the first dose will do the job.
Oh.
So it's recommended two doses. So I better not say yes to the 2 week, the 10 day to 2 week magic number. I better say, you know, maybe we're talking about 6 weeks instead of 2 weeks.
Just to build that up.
Yeah.
Now, if I'm still nursing him and I get the flu shot, do any of those antibodies get, you know, into him?
Probably.
Okay.
Probably.
That might be another way to kind of help.
Yeah. And I think, again, that's not going to be as good as if he were vaccinated.
Right.
But, you know, we'll take it.
Okay.
It's a help.
Okay. The other thing I have, because it's, for me, it's high allergy season, and, you know, I've gotten mixed information as far as what medicines actually are okay for me to take, given that I am still nursing him. And, you know, I've looked on websites, I've asked the pediatrician, I've asked doctors and pharmacists, and, you know, I'm just not sure if it's okay for me to be taking things like Benadryl or Sudafed while I'm still nursing him.
Probably yes. And, you know, nobody's going to give you an answer because most of these medications haven't been studied. But he's 4 months old, so he's getting to be a strapping infant. Yes, some will go through, almost all medication crosses into the breast milk. But it's going to cross into, you know, it's going to be diluted out. So you may find that he's a little sleepy from the Benadryl. But there are very few medications that cross about all medications will get into the breast milk. But there are very few medications that will do harm to the baby.
Okay.
You know, if you're on chemotherapy,
Yeah.
If you're on antithyroid drugs, some antithyroid drugs, don't do it.
Okay.
But most of the over-the-counters, and, you know, if you need an antibiotic for something or even the prescription antihistamines, they're going to be okay.
Okay. Okay. And then finally, just a quick question on sleep habits. And I know he's only 4 months and all that, but, you know, I've again read books and stuff, and because he's in daycare, the routine that is usually prescribed by, you know, this sleep specialist isn't followed by them because they, you know, they've got six kids in there and everybody's on a different schedule, so they can't really do that. But one of the things I'm trying to figure out is it okay for a four-month-old to sleep up to 3 hours at a stretch? Because he's been doing that. And
for naps.
For naps.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's normally only done like an hour and a half at maximum.
Okay.
But lately he's kind of started doing the 2.5 up to 3 hour naps.
Okay. Yeah, he's otherwise perfectly fine sleeping well at night.
No, he's not sleeping through the night, and that's I'm wondering. Okay. If, you know, because and that's the thing. He'll get up once at most twice, for a while before he started daycare, he was sleeping through the night.
Okay.
Since he started daycare, it's kind of hit or miss. He doesn't get up at the same time every night, so it's not like he's in a pattern that way.
What does it take you to get him back to sleep again?
Usually I change his diaper, and sometimes that's enough. Sometimes I also nurse him.
Nurse him, okay.
Back to sleep.
And I expect that that's not a nursing, it's a short nursing.
Right.
A pacification
right.
at the breast.
A full, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You might talk with the daycare to see if they'll cut back his naps a little bit. Or it may just be that he's going through, I don't know, growth spurt or something for whatever, for any. I don't have a good explanation, but sometimes they'll go through periods where they just seem to want more sleep.
Okay.
And then they'll get out of that again. Because I'm not sure, because he's waking up at night, but you know, sort of a non-intervention or very minimal intervention is getting him back to sleep. I think I'd be much harder on the daycare if he were up for two hours in the middle of the night.
Oh, okay.
But since just minimal intervention, a kind of a little pacification at the breast or diaper change puts him back to sleep, you might talk with the daycare about seeing if they can cut back his naps a little bit, but I'm not sure they're going to be able to. It may be that he's just unconscious during these 3 hours and they're not going to be able to wake him up. And
Yeah. They say he sleeps pretty solid with five other babies in there. The fact that he sleeps through that is, I mean, he's in a separate room when he's sleeping.
Okay.
But I just wondered about that. Their policy is that if the baby wants to sleep, the baby can sleep because they need it, is the way they feel about it.
I agree with them.
Okay. So not to worry about that.
No.
Then. Okay, good. All right, well, being a new mom brings up all kinds of issues, so thanks for being there.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for the call. We're almost at our midpoint here with Dr. Robert Bocek, pediatrician here in Champaign-Urbana, taking your questions on children's health. Phone number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. We do have a listener waiting on line number 4 in Aurora. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi.
Good morning.
How are you, Dr. Bowden?
Fine, thank you. How are you today?
Well, I'll tell you, and I thank you.
If everything were fine, you wouldn't be calling.
Well, as someone fine, some didn't. We did take the girls to New York. Did I tell you that?
No.
It was a very nice happening, and I was glad the girls could go. They were so excited, the two 12-year-olds. To go to New York, that was just, and they were very fortunate that they had a great aunt whose house we stayed in, so they were able to see how people in the cities live in tall buildings with the elevators, et cetera, et cetera. And they went down to see the Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island, and they were just taken with it all. And I was so glad that they could see and feel and touch, you know, there in their lives what they would like to know without reading it in a book. That's what I was great.
Yeah.
It was such a good happening for them. And then we did go on vacation in August, and that's where the problem was. The adopted, for lack of a different word, granddaughter, was so unhappy that we might not go on vacation. And she said, gee, we went only once. I only went once. So, of course, we were very desperate to find a place because that was a problem. And we did, and we went on vacation. And we stayed in a cottage that had 4 rooms. And it was very, very cold the second week in August.
Okay.
And the mother of the girls and my daughter both smoke. And they had tried to step out to smoke, but it was so cold they couldn't, so they smoked in their room, and I was very upset about that. I didn't think that 2 should smoke and cause a hazard to the other 3, especially the 2 young ones. And I didn't handle it at all. I didn't know what to do, and I didn't want to make a problem. So I let it stay like that. What could I have done? Could I have done anything?
You know what? I think you did fine. You know, I think these two, these two smokers knew that didn't want to smoke around other people. I think they did the best they could to protect the other people. And I don't think... Yeah, I think you did fine. I think they tried their best to isolate themselves from other people. Boy, I'd hate to be in that room that those two were smoking in. That must have smelled pretty bad. But I think, no, I think they did their best to isolate themselves and protect other people. And I think that you harassed, if you would have harassed them, I think you'd have probably just made people unhappy. And I think what you did was perfectly good thing to do. Just so if you don't know what to do, sometimes the best thing to do is do nothing.
And I wonder sometimes about that do nothing policy, because my daughter smokes in her house with the two girls.
Yeah.
And I don't say anything, because I just don't say anything.
Well,
but
yeah.
I don't think it's fair for young people. I don't think it's fair to them. Well, I'll let it go, and thank you much. And that new mother that spoke before me, I remember those days. And hope she, I know she'll make it. She sounds very involved in wanting to solve her problems.
I think she's going to be fine, too. You know, I do feel sorry and extend my sympathy to new mothers, because I think what's happened in our society now is often grandmothers and experienced mothers aren't immediately available. A ton of books are available, and a ton of different experts are available, and the advice they give is often diametrically opposed to what the previous experts said. And so these poor moms are kind of left to say,
yes.
Who do I believe? And I think we've made an awful lot of experts, and I will take issue with some of the sleep experts who say when you're 14, you need 7.5 hours, and when you're 15, you need 7 hours and 45 minutes of sleep a night, because I'm not sure that we can get that data. And I think we've got too many experts and too much help and not enough practical help.
And, you know, I also remember once I was in the post office, and this little baby was in her mother's arms, and the booty was coming off. So I took the booty and I pushed it up further on the foot, and I tied the bow, and the mother looked at me and she says, "Thanks for doing that," she says. Her grandmother is in Florida.
Yes.
And I thought, and it's exactly what you're saying. The grandmothers are not around.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Oh,
bye.
Thanks for the call. Our lines are full, and I want to get right on to the next caller, and I promise I'll do that. Just on the smoking issue, I know people who smoke, you know, they don't know how it affects non-smokers. I mean, most, I have friends who smoke. I'm not, knocking them. It's just if you smoke, you can't smell it like people who don't smoke do. And it's just a fact. So it's a gap of understanding that is really hard. You say, well, it really bothers me. They go, well, what? Why? Why does it bother you? You know, because they can't tell.
But it sounds like these two smokers were making an effort.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. But it was raining and cold. And
right.
At the same time, I suppose we should give smoking addicts, we shouldn't freeze them to death. That's not the treatment.
It's a tough one. It's a tough call.
It's a tough one.
Yeah. Well, let's go on. We have several people waiting. We'll go next to a listener in Champaign on line number one. Good morning.
Hi.
Yes.
I have a nephew who is appearing to have considerable trouble with juvenile depression. He's only 6, but has talked about wanting to die sometimes and how he would affect that, and this was not in a temper tantrum, or this was a perfectly normal, freely offered bit of information on his part. It wasn't prompted or part of any manipulation on his part. And both sides of the family have a long history of clinical depression, so it doesn't seem like it's out of the question that he might be dealing with this, but I don't find very much on juvenile depression. I know it's a fairly recent kind of concept that for a long time it just wasn't thought to exist. And I was wondering if you know anything about it or know of any particularly salient literature or, you know, books or anything that could be helpful.
No, I'm sorry, I don't, but, you know, or I can't recommend a specific book, but you know what? This boy needs mental health help.
Well, he's getting it. My sister's right on it and having him evaluated and referred.
Yeah.
And she's watched him for a couple of years because she just noticed, even as young as four, that he, you know, didn't seem to enjoy things the way children do, and was kind of, you know, he'd retreat a lot. So knowing that he has it from both sides, she's also a mental health care professional.
Okay.
So she knew what to watch for, and she didn't panic or anything, but then she said, this is it. If he's actually having ideation, then, and I have tried to find some literature and just haven't been terribly successful.
Yeah, I think it's sort of a new mental health problem to pediatrics. Kids are supposed to be happy. They don't get depressed. Six-year-olds are supposed to be roller skating, riding their bikes, and that sort of stuff. They're not supposed to be depressed. And I think you're reading a lot now about antidepressant use in kids, that it may increase probably increases the suicide rate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the keys from your nephew, though, is a six-year-old is talking about death. Well, okay, in what context? That's sort of a red flag, but it's sort of a red flag. What context is he talking about? Has there been a death in the family recently? Is that why he's talking about
it?
And you're absolutely, you bring up the big red flag. This boy is talking about how he'd do it.
Yeah. And again, it was not in an emotional moment. It came up perfectly naturally. You know, he offered it freely. She was not probing him. And when she realized what he was saying, she tried as hard as she could not to get emotional, because she didn't want him to stop talking about it.
Yeah.
She needed to know more. And she did find out then about how he thought about doing it. And,
So he ran the little red flag up the flagpole, and then he ran the big red flag up the flagpole.
Yeah.
And fortunately, the parents picked up on it and got him mental health care, or he's undergoing mental health care.
He's getting it.
Yeah,
this was very recently.
Yeah.
So I believe he was evaluated or in the first step just this week. But I have been trying to find something for her to read, because she's understandably upset. And the other red flag is the hereditary thing.
Yes.
You know, that's another reason that she's terribly concerned, because it's not an issue for him of environment. You know, it's a perfectly healthy family environment. There are not outside stressors. So that does leave the genetics. And
whatever that has to do with it, you know, and I think that's something that's still being worked out too.
Yeah.
The genetics.
It does seem to be a correlation.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes from generation to generation, apparently, to some degree. And I don't think she's concerned about using antidepressants, and she'd certainly know, again, what to look for and that way. And I've heard, too, about this whole thing with the antidepressants and kids or adolescents, that, yes, there are some increased risks, but the benefits outweigh them, as long as you're informed and know what's going on. And, you know, so I don't know what the answer to that is.
Well, you know, I think the lesson out of antidepressants and the increased suicide risk in children, that sort of stuff, I think the moral of the story, or the lesson to be learned, is, doctor, be aware.
Mm-hmm.
Don't put somebody, I don't care if it's a kid or an adult, on an antidepressant and say, hey, I'll see you in a year or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think that, the name of the game is make sure that these people are getting good mental health care. And I think antidepressant drugs, in spite of what's coming out in the literature, probably has a role in the pediatric population, as long as it's being monitored.
Yeah, and So between his parents and, you know, the doctor, and I think that would be fine if that's a decision they make. But I guess I would love to be able to read some more about it.
I will leave you to the bookstore and the internet.
Right. I will fumble around elsewhere. But thank you very much for your thoughts.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Thanks for the call, and good luck. Next up, a listener in Whiteheath on line number 2. Good morning. Hello?
Hello, this is Suzanne. Hey, I'd like to ask a question about sports injuries.
Mm-hmm.
My son is 17, and he has been involved in sports, you know, just as soon as he possibly could. And he right now is experiencing an ankle. He has sprained ankle that has been reoccurring since February. He's doing soccer and basketball, and it was basketball season when he injured his ankle. And once again, just last night, he came home with it injured. It doesn't look like it's swelling all that much. He doesn't limp terribly. He does ice it.
Okay.
But I'm surprised that the coaches, you know, don't advise him, and maybe they do, but it does seem to me like when kids get injuries, they play them and shouldn't. But, you know, that's another debate. But if you could help me maybe to see whether or not I should take him to the doctor with this, with the ankle injury.
Okay. I don't know. How swollen is it? How bruised is it? Where's the tenderness?
Well, it's around his ankle bone, you know, and because he's had it 3 different times in the span of, you know, 9 months, that's why I'm wondering.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Does it get perfectly well? In 10 days, is it perfectly fine?
No.
Okay.
It's not where he has to wear a brace or anything, but he is wearing a brace right now with it. You know, yesterday he wore a brace, but he doesn't. He just wears his tennis shoes as usual. But you know, did they just feel like they, you know, they're being a wimp if they go to the doctor and, you know, just work through it?
Yeah, I'm hard-pressed to answer your question here. Most ankle, especially in a 17-year-old, it depends on the age of the child. The part of the ankle where the bone sticks out is usually the sprain is lateral, so it's the outside of the leg and it's over the malleolus. And in a 17-year-old, probably the ossification centers are fused, so usually a 17-year-old will have a plain old sprain. That ace, ice, and elevation will take care of. The younger child, due to the growth plate being there and the tendons being tougher than the bones, the younger child is more likely to have a fracture than a sprain, and probably ought to see a doctor more often. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, 3 sprains in a in your son, child, young man, adolescent who's in basketball, basketball probably sends more kids to the emergency room than any other sport. But what's the type of injury? It's usually an ankle sprain and something that's going to heal perfectly well and leave no damage, whereas football is going to send fewer to the emergency room, but it's going to be a knee that's gone.
Uh-huh.
So it's going to be more serious damage. Soccer gets all kinds of injuries, but I expect a lot of those are ankle too. So generally, ankle sprain, 3 ankle sprains in a boy as active as yours is in the sports he's in 9 months probably doesn't upset me that much.
Okay.
And I think each injury then has to be individually evaluated. How much swelling is there? How much pain is there? Where is the pain? Usually if it's underneath the bone, it's probably a sprain. And the important thing is to tap along that bone where it sticks out. If that hurts, it may very well be a fracture, and that probably ought to get medical care.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, thanks for the call. We have one caller waiting and time for others. We have just about maybe 10 or 12 minutes left during this hour, talking with Dr. Robert Bocek, pediatrician here in Champaign-Urbana, taking your questions on children's health issues. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. 9455. Next up, a listener in Champaign on line number 3. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a 2-month-old, and he has been suffering from diarrhea. Well, I don't know if he's suffering, but he's had diarrhea for the past 4 weeks. And at our last well baby visit, he didn't have a fever, he's not dehydrated, and he hasn't shown those symptoms since. And I'm nursing him, and so I've tried to take certain things out of my diet that might affect him, like dairy products, soy products, things like that, but there hasn't been any change. So I'm wondering if there's something that I need to be concerned about.
Okay. I'm sorry, he's 10 months old?
No. He's 2 months.
He's 2 months old.
Yes.
What do you mean by diarrhea?
It's water. It's watery. It's completely watery. There are no solids in it at all, and it's really stinky.
How many times a day?
Initially, he was having maybe 5 a day, and now it's maybe 2 or 3 really big ones, where it's coming out of the diaper.
Is there a little bit of residue on the diaper? Most of it soaks in, but there's a bit of residue on the diaper.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think I'd do anything. I think he's a 2-month-old breastfed baby.
Okay.
He's growing well?
Yes, he is.
And he's happy?
He appears to be happy.
Okay. I don't think I'd do anything.
Okay.
I don't think you've got a problem.
Okay.
Some breastfed babies will do this. The stool is diarrhea-like, but he's not having increased frequency or increased output over what I'd expect. And I don't think I'd do anything. I wouldn't mess with my diet. I wouldn't do anything. I think it sounds like he's a normal baby.
Really? So I'm reading in the book, that nursed babies, they have such sweet stools and everything. And this is like, I have to open the window. And
okay. You know, yeah, once when I was on call, I had a mother call me, and I think she was upset with my advice, but she was breastfeeding too. And she said somebody told her breastfed baby's stools don't smell bad, and hers did. And I said, if you bottled a breastfed baby stool and put O to something on it, I don't think it would sell very well. Breastfed stools don't smell as bad as formula-fed stools, but they aren't something.
It's all relative,
sell as,
huh?
Yeah, that you that would go very well as perfume and aftershave.
Right. Now, if he was having a problem, if he was having a negative reaction to my breast milk, how could I tell?
I would expect, number one, I'd expect a baby who is unhappy, who's probably having, some colicky abdominal cramping and that, and I'd expect a lot more stools, a lot more stool numbers than what you're seeing.
Okay. Now, he did go through that colicky period in the first 3 weeks.
Yeah.
But then that passed, and I figured that was just because his digestive system was immature.
Yeah. Oh, you got away with colic for only 3 weeks. You were a lucky lady.
It was rough.
Yeah, but it wasn't 12 weeks like it often is.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for the call. We have just about 10 minutes left. If people would like to join us, we have open lines, the number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. It seems to me that a couple calls have illustrated this thing that new parents go through with infants, and that is not knowing what's normal. I mean, it's really hard to know, and actually there's a wide range probably of what is normal for these things, whether it's, diet, diarrhea, but sleep especially. I was thinking about the mother who called, whose child is starting to wake up in the middle of the night at 4 months. I'm going, boy, I wish we had been that lucky.
Yeah, because normal is a very relative thing. What's normal? Mm-hmm. Well, and then you have the three, normal statistically defined. So you got 3% that are outliers that are still normal, but they aren't normal. And what's normal? And how do I make my kid, quote, normal, unquote?
Right.
If my kid only wants to sleep 7 hours a night when the experts say they're supposed to be sleeping 7.5 hours a night, how am I going to make my kid normal? And I think the answer is you're not. But I think also, I think there's been a lot recently about Do we get our kids over-involved, and do we not give them adequate time to sleep? Are they too busy with sports, gymnastics, violin lessons, cheerleading, plus their school and homework and that they don't have adequate time to sleep? And I think that's what we need to be considerate of, that we don't so over-involve them that they can't be normal.
Well, you know, I think that's an interesting point, because our culture has become so busy. We're all so busy doing so many things.
Yeah.
And, of course, Americans, if you look at these studies that they do, work so many more hours than anybody else. And we sort of have this expectation that we're busy all the time. And if we're not busy, there's something wrong with us or something. I mean, I think a lot of us fall into that trap. And so then we pass that down to our kids and make them as busy and crazy as we are.
And and the other thing I was talking with one of my daughters about is she works in a hospital, and she was noticing that the parents are either very young, parents too soon, if you will, or they're older.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the older parent, we were speculating, and I haven't seen any articles or data on this, the older parent presumably is more affluent, but perhaps a little less energetic. You know, when you're 40, you don't run as well as when you're 20. So are they then, to make up for their lack of energy and their lack of ability to be involved and play football and that sort of stuff as much, are they then getting their kids over-involved in things they can hire, in gymnastics programs and and things
Taekwondo
they can, And I think we need, you know, I guess my rule has always been to parents, if the child's enjoying it and seems perfectly fine, it probably is perfectly fine. And when they say, hey, I've had enough of this Taekwondo or gymnastics or whatever, I think it's perfectly all right for them to resign from it, to cease doing it. And the question is, are they quitters? Well, no, I don't think, you know, let them try it. If they've tried it for a reasonable time and it's just not in their area of gifts, that's fine. Let them out of it again and let them try something else, or let them focus on something else. But
another issue that I've seen a lot of parents struggle with, including yours truly, is this whole thing about video games. It's become so ingrained in, you know, grade school age kids, it's almost an obsession in some cases. And, you know, the word balance comes to mind. We're talking about all these other, you know, maybe athletic activities, musical lessons, all these other things that keep us busy. And then, you know, there's the GameCube or the Nintendo or, you know, Game Boy that kids, you know, carry around wherever they go, and they get so focused on that it becomes almost an obsession. And it's so hard as a parent to know what's, you know, is this pathological?
Yeah.
Is it healthy? What's the right balance?
And maybe I'll make myself an expert in video games.
Mm.
Your child at age 7 gets 15 minutes. Next year gets 60 minutes. But I think, again, it's like everything else.
Yeah.
What are their games? Because, we know that some of them are much more graphic and violent, and so that needs to be supervised, just as we supervise what TV shows and movies they watch.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's fun. They do enjoy it, so let them do it, providing their life otherwise seems to be in balance, that they are playing with friends, that they are getting their homework done, that their grades are appropriate, and there are some benefits from video games. It does improve hand-eye coordination and that, but there are certainly some well-known disadvantages from that, which is the graphic violence, and does it beget violence in the user?
Yeah. Well, we have about maybe 4 minutes left if someone wants to call real quick. Otherwise, I'll just carry on, because after all, I'm a parent. I have lots of questions. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We were also talking a little bit before the show about, you know, bullying issues. It's something that, you know, we all face as parents in dealing with our kids in school, and we certainly don't want our kids to be victims. And it's such a difficult thing to, you know, how do you teach them to be, you know, to stand up for themselves without becoming so afraid that, you know, again, it leads into, you know, almost an imbalance psychologically of you know, how do they relate to other kids without becoming either victims or you know, aggressors themselves.
But, you know, and the other thing to make matters, yeah, even more confusing is what you just alluded to. A lot of bullies or a lot of the bullied are bulliers at the same time. And it's sort of, and there's been a lot published about it recently, and I'm not sure we're going to, you know, I think we're jousting at windmills to a certain extent. I think the bullies have to be brought up on a short leash. It is not appropriate behavior to bully, and I think school authorities and teachers and that need to pay attention to it, and I think some appropriate behavior modification needs to be done to bullies, but I don't think we're going to eradicate the problem because it's been going on forever, and it's sort of, and unfortunately, we adults still bully, and I think the difference is we adults are more, we don't punch people in the eyes, usually, but maybe they don't get their raise, or maybe, yeah, you know, I think bullying doesn't end with childhood. I think bullying is natural and, well, I'm not sure it's right, but I think we're stuck with it forever, and I don't think we're going to get rid of it. But I think, yeah, the bullied child needs to be protected by adult authorities.
Well, we're going to have to stop there. We're out of time. There's much more we could talk about. So let's do this again next month.
Okay.
All right. Our guest has been Dr. Robert Bocek, pediatrician from Champaign-Urbana. He joins us on the third Thursday from 10 to 11 in the morning. And always glad to have you with us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Agricultural information is made possible in part by a grant from the Archer Daniels Midland Company. ADM, the nature of what's to come. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from Strawberry Fields in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields Catering Department now offers boxed lunches for professional meetings or casual lunchtime gatherings. Strawberry Fields, 328-1655. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway piano showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos.
That's it for this hour of Focus 580. When we return about 10 minutes, we'll be talking with Jim Kuhn. He's a former executive assistant to President Ronald Reagan. He has a new book just published entitled Ronald Reagan in Private, a memoir of my years in the White House. He'll join us right after the news from NPR. First, we have a break for some news and a market update. And here's Jay Pierce.
And thank you very much, Jack Brighton. It's coming up on 10:59. And taking a look at the Chicago Board of Trade, we see December wheat down 1.5 now at 335.75. The March 05 contract also down 1.5 at 346. December corn, 216.75, down one, well, just switched to 217, down 1.5.